All right, hey, this is Greg Gutfeld. Welcome to, I believe this is the fourth episode of The One. It's called The One because I am the one from The Five, and there's just me, and I get to invite guests. A little housekeeping. I love the word housekeeping. It sounds like I'm actually doing things. I'm still trying to talk slower because I still feel that I talk too fast, which is a consequence of television, because you feel like you've got to get something in before Beckel interrupts you. Or other people that I won't mention. But the great thing about this podcast is we get to have people on who are, you know, aren't in town. And then there are people that are in your building that you didn't even know were in your building, like my next guest. And then we get them on and we get to talk about stuff that we don't get to talk about on The Five or even the GG show. But first, I want to introduce, before we get into the stuff, I want to talk about the Sean Spicer stuff first. But I want to introduce our guests. First, I'm going to go to the person on the line. Does that sound great? On the line. It's like an old radio show. Amanda Head. She's a talk radio host and a political commentator. She's based in a place called Los Angeles. And she's the host of The Hollywood Conservative. Hi, Amanda. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Yeah, just a little known place called Los Angeles.
Yes.
And I'm a talk radio host. I was in the music industry for 9 years out here until I finally said, I can't do this. I can't deal with you people anymore. And turned to talk radio, which I feel like is probably where I should have been all along, because I've always had a big mouth and been very opinionated, which didn't work out too well with my contracts in the music industry. But now it does, so it's perfect. But I'm a little jealous. Is Stephen Miller there with you, and I'm, like, lower down the totem pole on the phone?
How dare you introduce my guest before I introduce them? I'm hanging up on you right now. Actually, I'm not, because I not only have Stephen Miller.
Here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sorry about that, Stephen. She just went ahead. Typical talk radio host. She just decides.
Some, like, live competition.
I'll just take over.
Yeah.
Stephen Miller is actually – I'll just take over from here. Here's an interesting fact about Stephen Miller. He actually works in this building. But I've never met him. And he's a former contributor at National Review. He's a current contributor at Heat Street. What I like about Stephen Miller is that he's a masterful tweeter. He has the right tone and never takes his tweets seriously and is able to expose the self-righteousness on Twitter, which I find endlessly amusing. Stephen, I enjoyed, for example, recently – when Stephen Miller, the other Stephen Miller at the White House, had done that, I guess it was a Meet the Press thing, people were going after you, and I enjoyed how you handled it.
Oh, you have to enjoy it.
Yes.
You can't – I mean, it's one thing where you'll get everything from screaming, you know, the screaming MAGA train brigade who's just like, you were great, to, hey, thanks, to people who just mistaken you for it, and you just kind of have to
– I like – that you didn't correct anybody and say,
"What fun is
no,
that?
That's I'm not that Stephen Miller." You actually responded, while having them believe, that you were Stephen Miller from the White House.
What fun is that? I mean, to just go and that's not me. This is Twitter.
Yes,
you can't mistake me. I've had a couple of good. I had Bill Burton, who was an Obama guy, who now he also runs a PR firm, who during the convention. I fired off some ridiculous tweet, and he jumped back saying, "Here's a Trump aide," thinking that, and I challenged him to a debate in, like, the press tent.
Yes.
Anytime, I said, "I'll see, I want to debate with you on, like, CNN," and he's like, "Anytime, anywhere," and I'm like, "Okay, I'll be in the press tent in 15 minutes," and he's like, "My plane's just landing. I can't do that now."
That is fantastic.
So
he never knew that you were not the Stephen Miller.
I'm still waiting for the debate.
That's hilarious. See, that's the right way to handle people. Now, I want to talk about the story that led almost all the news shows yesterday. It was Sean Spicer making an obvious mistake. And what drove me crazy about the story, everybody knows what he did, but I'll just repeat it. He compared Assad to Hitler, and he made the mistake of saying that, you know, Assad used chemical weapons, but Hitler didn't. And it was such an obvious mishap. And you could see it. You could see it on his face that he knew he'd stepped in it. But that doesn't stop human beings. When human beings even realize that you're making a mistake – they won't give you any leeway. They jump in and they go, shame on you, and you're a denialist and all this other stuff, when you get when it's so clear the guy just totally screwed up, just like everybody else.
When people realize that you've made a mistake, if anything, it almost makes it worse because they sense blood in the water.
Right.
And of all of the misquoted information out there, this probably provides the left with the fodder that they don't need, because all of the comparisons to Hitler have happened already. You know, America has been kind of desensitized to all of these accusations against Trump. He's a Hitler, he's a racist, bigot, right, xenophobe, all of these things that people don't even buy into it anymore. And it's the boy crying wolf, and the left are these petulant, spineless, overly complaining, prepubescent boys, and Trump appears to be the big bad wolf. Well, what he actually is the strict parent who wants things to click along in the household and wants to raise kids who aren't entitled little assholes.
Interesting. We'll have to bleep
that. Can I say that on your podcast?
It's too late now. Probably in, if it wasn't affiliated with Fox.
It wasn't me. It's pretty cool. I thought I was going to be the first one to drop one of those. Yeah.
You know, Stephen, what I love about it is the moment somebody makes a mistake and another person calls them on it, that person almost always makes a mistake. There's a great a reporter for The Hill was criticizing Spicer for his Hitler comments and referred to Spicer as Hitler. So they actually made a mistake. And you could argue it's not as grand a mistake, but still, when you're pointing out mistakes, God or whatever it is has a way of letting you do the same thing.
Yeah, and that's the danger with a format like Twitter where it's, you know, live 24/7. And as it goes, kind of what Laura was saying is, you know, a tweet makes it around the world before and any explanation is a chance to – a tweet is basically like Superman and Superman 2 going the earth and stopping the revolution and doing all of that stuff. And I mean, the thing – everyone assumed automatically it was kind of done in bad faith, and, you know, especially – media journal Twitter. I think you need to get randos on Twitter blasting the stuff out. That's just going to happen. But they're also following the lead of people who either think it's done in bad faith or when it was just clearly, you know, something that was a gaffe, which he atoned for and all of that stuff. But, you know, Spicer is an easy target for this White House. And that's, you know, the journal Twitter again, which everyone's pretty familiar, I'm not a fan of, is they're going to kind of run out with it. And we had a Cosmo writer who immediately went out with Spicer is a Holocaust denier and a Hitler apologist. And to her credit, she corrects it, but it's already out there. It's like he's apologizing for Hitler, and Spicer's not walking out in Hugo Boss, you know, dressed to the nines. You know,
he's nicely done there. I mean, very good.
He's, you know,
I wish we could just stop making the Hitler thing on either side, on the left and the right, that all of these Hitler comparisons, it's like fetch. Let's just stop trying to make fetch happen. Stop doing it. And you have to be very careful
when you
castigate people for these kind of mistakes, because, you know, what about Joe Biden asking the quadriplegic senator to stand up, and Obama said there's 57 states. You have to be very careful with, you know, chastising someone for making a mistake like this. Right. When you know that your side is doing the same thing on basically a weekly basis.
Also, I always wonder, what did they use before Hitler? Like, what was the Hitler comparison? I guess did they use Genghis Khan, I guess?
Yeah.
It's like, you're worse than Genghis Khan.
Yeah.
I don't know, but Genghis Khan was pretty bad.
Pontius Pilate, maybe?
Pontius Pilate. Yeah. My favorite was yesterday, Judd Legum. Do you know that name? Judd Legum
from Think Progress.
Yes.
Juddle Gum.
He came after me for pointing out yesterday. I was on the 5, and I pointed out that Spicer made a mistake, and I made the point of, like we all do here on the 5, because people in the media should be really careful about going after people who make gaffes, because it's going to happen. And so Judd Legum came after me, and then, like, must have been, I don't know, within an hour, he had to apologize because he attributed, I think, a tweet or a Facebook message to Sean Spicer that wasn't him. So it's like it happens when you get self-righteous. The first thing that happens is you screw up.
You knew who else was pretty self-righteous and screwed up?
Who?
Hitler.
No. Now you're gonna have to walk that. But are you trying to compare him to somebody else?
Right. No. I mean, a lot of these guys know that nothing like trends on Twitter like a good Hitler comparison.
Right.
You know, we should just rename it Twitler.
Twitler.
Put a little stash on the bird.
Yes.
And throw it out there and be done with it.
Right now,
and
somebody is going to patent that or copyright it.
And
go ahead.
That's part of the danger of throwing out these comments is And it's indicative of the culture that we're in today with such a fast-moving news cycle that if you don't comment on something immediately, then your comment won't have any relevance, you know, an hour later. So people are constantly throwing bait out there to try to get more followers and more viewers and more listeners. And you know, accuracy has become less important than timeliness when it comes to commenting on stuff.
You know what it's like, the kind of like the Hitler comparison or tweeting for reaction. It's like the guy at the gym who bangs his weights. You know, the guy that just has to, like, he does the squats or he's doing the, what's the other thing? Yeah. And then drops the, but when he, the whole dropping the weights so everybody has to look, that's like, that's the hot take of Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say that that's accurate. And you know what? I mean, my thing on that is, and I'm guilty of that as anybody, but my thing on that is that's kind of, you know, going back to what you said about how somebody uses Twitter and stuff like that is, you know, some people are really good at it. Some people aren't. Some people just want to be part of the mob where they tweet something like, oh, my God. Or, you know, you get journalists who tweet a lot like, you know, you'll get the Politicos or the Wash Post people. Wow. You know, and it's like this is the first time they've ever seen this in their life.
You know what my favorite is? Good Lord.
Good Lord.
Now that's the new thing. So everybody puts good Lord and then they tweet something and you expect it to be some kind of horrible thing. And it's just another like, this is – why am I – by the way, okay, this goes into kind of segues into the next topic. Why are we on Twitter? Why do we do Twitter when we know that it harms us? I just listened to like a 3-hour podcast.
It doesn't harm me.
That had Sam Harris and Dan Harris. It was Joe Rogan. And to watch Sam Harris, who's a public – I would call him a leading public intellectual, almost not a breakdown, but just – it was obvious that there was deep psychological consequences to him reading his ad mentions on Twitter. And he started talking about how this guy Cernovich was going after him and he should have just blocked him. But he just – like why do we let something into our lives that actually makes everything less beneficial?
Stephen, I don't know. I kind of have to disagree. I think that on some level, it is a little harmful because, you know, at what point are we collectively going to realize the destruction that social media and mainstream media are causing? Because
never.
On Facebook, you know, you have 34,000 quote unquote friends, but you're spending all of your waking hours at home in solitude, and eliminating someone from your life really only takes one click. So it makes us feel connected, but at the same time, it's actually pushing us apart, and you're sensationalizing news and picking out the most controversial bits in order to keep people glued to your content. And this is the bottom line. Mainstream media is fake news. Social media is fake life.
Now, I think that's a good point. And this is another – I noticed this, Stephen. When somebody flatters me on Twitter, I never respond. But if somebody insults me, I will actually say, well, if I don't respond, if I don't respond, then I'm a weak person. So it's like if you actually like me, don't say, Greg, I'm a big fan. Say you're what would be a good thing to say to me that would get me to respond?
You're an idiot. Y-O-U-R.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. And of course, I would write back,
It's your with a star.
You're an idiot whose books suck.
Yes.
W-H-O apostrophe.
Egg Avatar.
Nicely done. Yes. But okay, Stephen, I think you have a lighter mental involvement in Twitter. Were you kind of like
I'm always drunk. That's
okay.
The only thing. No, I you know, to go back, I there's a lot to chew on with this. Is one, I think Twitter is whatever you want it to be. I don't think it's destructive if you don't want it to be destructive.
Right.
You can, you know, here's the thing. I have friends that I know that they're not, you know, they're not commentarians on Twitter, they're not in media. Who they read it for news, you
right.
know, like people read it for sports news, and they get and they do it because Twitter is the fastest, easiest way to do it. You don't have to wait for, all due respect, The Five to come on or Brett Baier to come on or
how
NBC.
Dare you?
I know,
I do.
I personally wait, but people don't.
Do.
They can at their lunch break. They can fire up their phone and they can just read what's going on. And then you know, there's people like where. You know, I can get in there and I can do a little bit of trolling or commenting or just firing off whatever I see. And I don't really think about the amount of followers I have or anything like that. I don't know why I have anybody following me at all. But it is whatever you want. If you don't like people, you know, saying things about you, block them. If you don't want them, mute them. That's even more fun.
Muting is great because they don't know they're being muted.
Right.
And I always
screaming into the void.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like, you know what muting is like? Imagine that there's an old cartoon from, I think it was National Lampoon, about a guy who asks a girl out. And then when he's like in high school, and then she says no. And then for his entire life, he works hard. He gets rich. He buys cars. And then he comes back home to tell her, to look how great I am. And she had died like a year after.
Right.
She turned him down. So he had no idea that she had muted him.
Yeah. I mean, like someone like me where I came, I had nothing to do with, you know – I didn't have a journalism degree.
Right.
I don't have these things. So if it's not for something like Twitter where I was able to kind of amplify my thoughts, my voice, and then some people just catch on. I think Michelle Malkin was the first person who kind of, you know, caught the stupid things that I just ramble on about. And, you know, I do tweet a lot. But my thing is I have a supercomputer in my pocket where I can use it for free to fire off anything that I see. And that can be, you know, it can be media hypocrisy. It can be something about a movie casting or something like that. So I try to keep things funny. My thing is the joke I make with people is I will retweet literally anybody if it makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Anything makes – I don't care where they are on the political
spectrum.
No wonder
you don't retweet me.
Right.
That hurts me deeply. I do retweet you. Amanda, though, I do get your point. I do get your point. I always feel like – even when – I feel very guilty about my Twitter use when there are people in my life. Like I'm like I will go like I should be actually going to try to grab something to eat with my wife, but I'm about to go out the door, but then I checked something and then it's an hour passes and that's an hour of my life that's gone.
Well, this is something I had to learn when I started doing talk radio. When I was in the music industry, you know, our Vivo music videos, of course, accrued thousands and thousands of comments, and people would say things like, oh, she looks like a hooker, this girl can't sing.
Right.
But that stuff didn't really bother me as much as the comments that I started getting as a political commentator and talk radio host, because people can't separate character from politics. You know, if you're a Republican, then you think that Democrats are either stupid or bad people. And it goes the other way, too. So people, this whole Facebook culture, and I'm wondering, you know, is it really good for us? Because, you know, Stephen, I see your point. I know that, you know, I don't have a journalism degree either. I have a musical background. I really have no business doing what I'm doing. But if it weren't for social media, I probably wouldn't have as large of a voice as I have 1 year in. So, I get that too. But I think, you know, Greg, I know you love artificial intelligence. I think we need to get AI involved.
Yes.
And have a whole army of robots who go and screen every individual person and determine whether they are smart enough and equipped enough to actually have a social media account from which they can pontificate.
Do you think the Twitter developers, the guys who built this thing, what was it, 7, 8, 9 years ago, ever thought that, hey, Hitler's going to trend weekly when we do this. This is going to be great. Or do you even think that they probably would have elected a president that most of the people at Twitter aren't gigantic fans of.
But do you ever think
that, you know, like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, it's like you were so concerned that, you know, you didn't stop to think if you should do this.
Yes, no.
As the result of this 8-year great experiment of social media would result in a Donald Trump presidency, which Twitter played a large part of that.
I agree. And Trump was he learned how to use it. Do you ever do this? Because this is what I think Twitter is in a weird way. Do you ever find yourself imagining thought conversations with people that actually anger you and change your mood that didn't happen? Maybe it's just me, but you create a conversation. Like, let's say you go into a place and you buy a soda. And then
a Pepsi?
Let's say it's a Pepsi. And then you have this imagined conversation as you're leaving that the person's rude to you. And then you work through this entire conversation. And all of a sudden you find yourself incredibly angry, even though it didn't happen. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you mean.
I do that all the time because –
Yes.
Go ahead, Stephen.
No, go ahead, Laura.
Amanda.
Amanda.
Laura, if you say
out.
Laura, at least 40% of the time you're right. But go ahead, because you're about to agree with me.
My radio career is over.
But Amanda, you do this as well. It's not just me.
Yes, because I tend to be like a bomb thrower on social media. I'm not crazy active on social media. I've had to learn over the course of the last year to ignore the haters or block them. But I like to throw bombs. So I'll like post an article that I know people are going to be incensed about. And then I just let the conversation ensue and let people just boil. And at the same time, in my mind, I'm inserting my own comments that are just going to feed the fire. But these people are keeping the fire going without me. You know, my what's going on in my head is actually playing out in real life.
Yeah. See, the thing is, I think that Twitter is actually kind of replicating something that we've always done in our minds, which is that it's kind of like the Seinfeld episode where Constanza is like going through what he should have said. Remember?
Yeah.
He's like, this is what I should have said. The jerk store, I guess, is the episode. But we actually, I think we do that. Somebody might piss us off at the gym mildly, not even on purpose, but you could walk home, get on the subway, go to work, and have created an entire conflict out of and that person has no idea that you're doing it. But I think
And then I feel like such an idiot because I'm like, why couldn't I have thought of that and said it then?
Yes, but I'm saying it didn't even merit it. It's just like something – it's like a mental exercise that you play.
It's just how people use it, and so they kind of use that to vent, which is – and you see – and again, that goes back to what I said about how I think that people will use it for however they want it to use it. And I think that there's so much emphasis played on – you know, we need to ban people who are racist, sexist, misogynist, and all of this stuff about making sure Twitter's the safe place. And I think that goes back to I don't think the developers ever really realized that, you know, their platform was going to be hijacked by Donald Trump and his
amazing
Pepe army. But I also think, again, I think it's up to the, you know, and this goes back to this whole wave of what we talked about fake news, is it goes back to the individual has to distinguish for themselves and be adult enough to decide how they're going to use Twitter as opposed to sitting there and firing off every grievance that they might have with someone who doesn't like their opinions. And to me, I think the best kind of funny Twitter conversations, which I'll just read, not even get involved with, are the ones where they just go off the rails over the most benign comment or something like that. And that's usually how it goes with most comment sections. But I'm also maybe a sadist because I think comment sections are the best part of any website.
They're only the best if you have no connection with it. Like if you are like an anthropologist landing into going to a comment board of a rock band and you can go in there and just say like pick the band, like say I don't care what the band is, Nickelback. I know it's a cliche, but let's say you get onto a Nickelback do they still have message boards?
I don't even know.
Yes.
I don't even know if they still have Nickelback.
Yes.
My brother is a computer engineer, and he's on a message board that the one topic that people talk about is innovations in computer keyboards.
Wow. And it still goes crazy?
Every once in a while, I want to go on this forum and just, like, verbally poop all over their ideas and be like, keyboards suck. They're going to be gone in a year. You guys suck, and just like completely destroy them.
You get the hipsters in there who are like, no, I'm kind of really a fan of this Commodore keyboard from the 1980s that I totally just re-engineered into a Mac keyboard that I just hooked up, and it's I even made it Bluetooth acceptable. I mean, those are the things.
This is like making keyboard buttons like Star Wars figurines.
I'm okay with that.
I don't know. I don't know. Well, you know what? I wanted to tell
everyone needs a hobby.
We're kind of out of time. We've been going for, 25 minutes? And that's usually when I say people get – like people go, that's enough. Even though I feel like I could go for another half an hour because we didn't even get to artificial intelligence. And there was this great story about these cars that – you know, the self-driving cars that actually started making unpredictable decisions. And I wanted to talk about this, but I don't think we have time. But
I can get in a good story here in like 2 minutes.
All right,
so
go for
a friend of mine who works on engineering on cars and stuff like that posted like a test that they give at Harvard about how they judge human AI into car AI. So what you do is you take the test about what the AI car should do. So you have a car going down a road with a blockade, old ladies crossing the street. What do? Do you swerve the car? Do you change it? Mm-hmm. And then they take the results of those tests and they kind of build that into the AI and stuff. And I mean, I took the test and I thought it was great because I just told the car to go straight no matter what all the time. Because once you start introducing an AI to turn, next thing you know, the AI is going to be like, I'm going to the drive-thru. Like I'm going to the car wash. You don't teach a car. You don't teach a robot to turn. You teach the robot to go straight, no matter what.
Plow through
the old lady if you have to.
The car is going to be making the moral decisions. If you have a fan, like the car is driving, right? And let's say a little old lady is crossing the street, and you're on. Let's say you're on Highway 1, which is on a cliff, and there is an old lady crossing Highway 1. The car has to decide, is she worth saving or is the baby in the car worth saving? So it has to do these calculations. Like, you have an 18-month-old baby. This is an 81-year-old. The 81-year-old, perhaps she had a good life. The car has to make these decisions. And,
but you know they can create the coding for that. They can make a code for anything. So they'll probably create some type of, like, hierarchy of options. So at the top you've got young children, then you've got old people, then you've got public servants. Well, actually at the top it's probably illegal aliens.
Yeah, I'm kind of conservative libertarian, so I look at it and say, how much is the old lady making off of Medicaid and how much is she making off Social Security? Does that outweigh what the baby is going to – does that outweigh what the baby is going to accumulate in student loan debt?
And on that note, this is why I believe in AI, because AI is going to be more moral than both of you combined.
And they're
going to
cut us off. AI is just like, you're done.
AI is going to be highly – I'm telling you, AI – they're going to crowdsource amongst themselves what morality is, and we're not going to have – we're going to have great AI judges. We're going to have great AI everything, except we're going to be the barnyard chickens. We're going to be scrounging around for
AI
food.
AI is going to decide who gets to stay on a United Airlines flight.
Exactly. And they're not going to make that mistake again. All right, Amanda Head, good to talk to you, the Hollywood conservative. Check her out. Stephen Miller, Heat Street, look him up. Also, he's on Twitter. He's Red Steez, I believe is his name. All right, guys. Thanks so much.